WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Welcome back. It's 5:38 now here on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. What is the future of work and the American worker? A new book tries to tackle that question. The Once and Future Worker, A Vision for the Renewal of Work in America. The author is Orrin Kass, a senior fellow at Manhattan Institute for Policy Research, and is with us this morning on the telephone. Orrin, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I want to talk about the lots of different things from the book, but first let's do sort of an overview. The Once and Future Worker, A Vision for the Renewal of Work in America. What were you hoping to address here?
Well, I really wanted to talk about the importance of work, both to our economy, but also just to people and their families and their communities. I think we've moved as a nation to an almost exclusive focus on consumers and consumption, and the more cheap stuff we have, the happier we think we'll be. And yet that hasn't worked out so well, and I think it's because in pursuing that, we've really abandoned work and workers and stopped paying attention to what's important to people on the job.
We have been dealing with it here in Chicago in northern Illinois, a couple of different competitions for big jobs projects. One of them across the border in Wisconsin was Foxconn. We were just rejected for the Amazon headquarters. Why are we all competing for these big bids, these big projects like this? And how does this impact workers either negatively or positively in your view?
Well, I think these bids are a perfect example of how important work is, and the fact that these communities, you know, whether they win or lose, they're offering everything they can think of to get more employers to come. And it's because these jobs have so much value to the communities. And you contrast that with how, you know, you look at the Environmental Protection Agency in Washington and how they think about it. They say having these jobs come would be a cost, and that they think communities don't want it. So we've got these things backward, and yet if we want to go in and create more jobs and support work, going company by company and trying to bid for each one is a terrible idea, and it's a bad deal for taxpayers, because now you look at where, you know, Foxconn in Wisconsin or Amazon in New York and D.C., they get all these huge benefits and tax breaks, but why are they the only ones who get it? Why shouldn't any company have the same treatment? So we really have to stop doing this bidding company by company and instead say, how can we change the conditions in our economy so that any company, so that anyone who wants to go out and hire people has our support to do that?
How does that play out from a regional standpoint? Is it folks who are in regional or rural areas away from some of these city centers that aren't getting these jobs? How are they impacted by all of this?
Well, they've certainly been negatively impacted by the trajectory our economy has taken and the priority our policymakers have had, which is, you know, we've made it incredibly easy and attractive to build businesses in finance or technology, these kinds of industries that don't do anything in the physical world, that don't employ a lot of people, that certainly don't employ a lot of less skilled people. And then we've made it as hard and unprofitable as possible to go and build successful businesses of the kind that we had in the past in other parts of the country. And some people say, oh, well, you know, it's just technology. This is just an unavoidable trend. But that's not true. There's nothing about trends in our society that make it inevitable that, you know, coastal cities are going to benefit and everybody else is going to lose. If we want to have a society where places all over the country win, where you can live where you grew up and build a good life there, we can have that too. We just have to make it our priority. And right now it's not.
And that brings us to post-midterms. Now that the election is over and we have a Democratic House and Republican Senate, are these the kinds of issues that they should be dealing with? I'm sure there would be it seems to me that it's a no-brainer to think that there'd be bipartisan support to have solutions, broader solutions to some of these issues that we're talking about.
Well, it should be something that everybody wants to work on. And, you know, certainly out on the campaign trail, everyone says they care about good jobs. I think the problem is that when you actually sit down and start talking about policy, you realize that there are some real trade-offs that we have to grapple with. So, you know, I mentioned in the environmental context, you know, you might have to say having the cleanest possible air isn't always the top priority. And obviously that's going to upset some people. Another big one is in terms of education. We've built this system that focuses completely on college for all, puts all of our money into high schools that prepare people for college, and then puts a lot of the money into college. And yet most Americans aren't even earning a community college degree. So I think it's just common sense to say, wait a minute, we have this backward. The people who need our help, the people we should be focusing on, are the people who aren't headed for college. But if you do that, you know, you're gonna anger an awful lot of the sort of upper middle class folks who really like the idea that someone else is going to pay for college for their kids. And so I think these are exactly the trade-offs that we have to grapple with, and we have to be willing to say, if we care about everybody's success in society, having a labor market where everybody can succeed, then it can't just be about raising taxes and mailing checks to people who got left behind. We have to actually be prepared to reorient some things in our economy to make it one that's going to work for everybody.
Yeah, and part of that reorienting might include directing safety net spending toward wage subsidies. I know people have been talking about a universal income as perhaps a solution moving forward, but this notion of making it a safety net project is one that seems appealing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example. This idea of universal basic income is kind of the logical endpoint for the people who are doing really well and don't want to think about everybody else. The idea is basically, let's just create a policy where we send checks to everybody every month. That's enough to live on. And so sure, you know, rich people have to pay higher taxes, but they're happy to pay higher taxes if they don't have to change anything else in their lives. And I think we actually have to go the other direction and say, no, we can't move toward a society where some people are the economic winners and kind of pay everybody else to go away and leave them alone. We actually have to go the other direction and say, this society is only going to work. We are only going to have a successful nation if it's one that's inclusive and where everybody can work and everyone can be a productive contributor. And that's not the direction we're headed right now, and it requires really this focus on the renewal of work and saying the most important thing isn't, you know, economic growth is important, but it's not the only thing. And if we're doing growth in a way that leaves people behind, that's not acceptable. We actually have to put a much bigger priority on choosing the kinds of policies and having the kind of culture that that creates opportunities for everyone to be a worker.
Orin, I haven't had a conversation yet about the future of work that doesn't include robots and automation and what impact that would have on all of us. What are your thoughts on that? And is the future... are you optimistic about the future in this regard, or pessimistic?
I'm optimistic in this regard. I think, obviously, as you said, every conversation ends up with this question, well, what about the robots? And the reality is that robots can be workers' best friends. Robots, or any sort of technology that makes it possible to make more stuff with less hours of work, or with fewer workers, that's the exact formula for rising prosperity, whether you're talking about the assembly line in factories, or mechanization in agriculture, or now computers and robots, allowing workers to produce more with less time, that's how you get their wages to go up. That's exactly what we should want. The question is, as that's happening, what's happening in the broader economy? As that's happening, are we seeing more additional opportunities for workers? Are we seeing demand to make more stuff? Or do you get into a situation where the robots start to make more stuff and we say, well, then we just don't need these other workers. And that's where it can go wrong. So there's nothing from history that says robots need to be a problem. Historically, all of this technology has been great. The problem comes if you don't use it in the context of an economy that is really valuing roles for workers, too.
It is interesting that in this time of low unemployment, where we have all these jobs being created and everybody saying how happy they are about that, that there is still a thought that workers are still in a state of crisis. How do we put these two things together and sort of understand both items?
Well, I think you have to distinguish the business cycle, meaning are you in a boom or are you in a recession, from the longer-term trend. And it's certainly true that right now things look much better than they did in the depth of the recession, you know, 5-10 years ago. But that's not the right comparison. The right comparison is how does it look to compared to past booms. And so if you compare today to, you know, before the financial crisis or during the dot-com boom or even back in the late 80s, what you see is that there are many, many, many more prime-age workers, meaning people between 25 and 54, so the years when they're supposed to be working, men in particular, see a much higher share of them just not working, not even looking for work. And that's a share that keeps going up. It's worse this boom than it was during the last boom, worse during the last boom than the boom before that. So absolutely, we should celebrate that we're having a boom. That's sure as heck better than having a recession. But it doesn't change the long-run picture, which is that our economy continues to drift away from the interests of the typical worker. And if the next recession comes, and it will come, and the boom that comes after that is even worse than this one, we're still on that downhill slope. And we have to turn that around so that the actual picture, not just this year, but over the next 20 or 40 years, starts to look a lot better than what we've had over the last few decades.
How does all of this work into the 2020 presidential election? Will this be front and center in that campaign?
I think it will be. I mean, I think whatever you think of Donald Trump, one reason he had a lot of success and one thing he really brought in 2016 was a different way of talking about some of these problems. I mean, both parties, Republicans and Democrats, had always just talked about consumption. You may have heard the term the economic pie, right? As long as we grow the economic pie, everybody can have a bigger slice. And what that meant was as long as the economy keeps getting bigger, we can always give everybody enough stuff. Republicans said, well, as long as, you know, we keep cutting taxes, the economy will grow and everybody will win. And Democrats said, well, that's not quite true. We're also going to have to redistribute. We're going to have bigger safety net programs. And Donald Trump came along and said, that's not what people care about. That's not what's going wrong here. The problem is that for a huge chunk of workers and communities, they're just being left behind. They're not having a chance to build their own productive lives. And so I think we've seen that shift in our national discussion, and that will continue in 2020. The question is whether it will see the follow-through with actual policies. You know, it's easy to say you care about work and then go back to talking about the exact same set of policies you were talking about before. And so far, that's especially what we've seen from Democrats and from the folks who are kind of getting ready to run for president. All of their ideas are just new ideas to mail bigger checks to people. And they all have their own one, and they'll all compete over who has the biggest check. But I don't think that's the right way of thinking about it. I don't think it's going to be a very effective message. I think we actually have to get back to talking about how are we going to really make some trade-offs in our society so that the folks who are being left behind actually have a chance to catch up and have a chance to participate.
Oren, thank you for giving us plenty to think about here. We appreciate your time, and congratulations on your book.
Thank you. Really appreciate the chance to talk with you.
Oren Cass is the author of The Once and Future Worker, A Vision for the Renewal of Work in America, also a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research. And again, the book is called The Once and Future Worker, A Vision for the Renewal of Work in America.